I don't know about you, but you may have noticed that it does feel as though Princess Diana is everywhere in the culture at the moment, right? We've seen The Crown. There's a new film out that's just been released called Spencer. It's by Pablo Larraine. It's about a fictional weekend where Princess Diana is played breathlessly by Kristen Stewart. It's meant to be a bit of an Oscar player this year. It does feel as though Princess Diana is really speaking to our current cultural moment. But it's interesting to think that this wasn't always the case, obviously. And also how the portrayal has changed since she first entered the public consciousness back in 1981 with her royal wedding to Charles, Prince of Wales. Now, to discuss a little bit about Princess Diana in our popular imagination, we're joined by Giselle Baston. She is an associate professor of English at Flinders University. Good morning, Giselle.
Good morning.
So Princess Diana is very culturally in vogue at the moment. It does feel like she's escaped the realm of, you know, the ceremonial tea set with Charles and Diana's wedding on it that your grandma might have had. Was it always the case that Princess Diana had this kind of popular luster around her?
Well, she certainly did. Throughout the 1980s and 90s, it was, she was perhaps the most famous person in the world. And after her death, of course, there was much, you know, mythologizing about her, and she was very much still in the British press, especially. But it went a bit quiet in the 2000s, and I was intrigued by that because, I mean, she's always been... she and the Windsors has always been my research. And I couldn't get anyone interested in Diana. All eyes were back on the Queen, really, and her rehabilitation in the post-Diana period. And films like The Queen came out in the early 2000s. So, and then, of course, William and Harry took over, you know, the front page, as it were. And so Diana kind of slipped back a bit, except for anniversaries and what have you. But she's back, and she's back with a vengeance. And I think it's because of people, a new generation, a new crowd, learning about her through The Crown. I mean, The Crown has just been enormously successful.
Well, let's talk a little bit about The Crown at the moment, because, you know, there has been this resurgence. You know, Peter Morgan, who I think wrote The Queen as well, wrote The Crown. He's been a big kind of, I guess, popular mythologizer of modern British history. I think he also wrote one of the, I think he's written one of the films about Tony Blair, or at least directed it as well. Do you think that The Crown is really the driving engine for people seeing, or a younger generation maybe, seeing Princess Diana and also viewing The Crown as kind of, as history, you know, taking it as, oh, yes, this is what happened?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think it's the big budget values, the research that's gone into the representations of the royals in The Crown, the fact that they've got their clothes right, you know, and, you know, it's certainly has upped the ante in terms of quality and depth. And it's also, as you say, presenting the story as history. And so people are thinking, gosh, I had no idea this all went on. I mean, I knew there was this royal family, but I didn't know really what their function was or what happened behind closed doors. So, of course, I mean, Morgan has had to imagine a lot of that, but it's pretty much based on, I guess, the, you know, the accumulation of detail that has come out through the biographies over the years and through details that the royals themselves have given us about their lives. I mean, Diana is on the record talking at length about her perception of life in the royal family. And so Morgan's got all of this material to build on that makes it feel somehow more legitimate. And I think people have responded to that sense that they're accessing history through this popular medium.
And I mean, with Princess Diana, you know, as you've said, she has taken on a kind of mythic quality in our media. And again, particularly at the moment, we've got Spencer that's just been released. It's meant to be a big Oscar player this year. Kristen Stewart, who famously American, is meant to give a wonderful portrayal of Diana in a fictionalized kind of fable manner. With these portrayals, you know, as they've kind of evolved from just a more soapy Charles and Diana, how happy they are of the time, as they've evolved into what we're seeing currently in cinemas, how do you think they've changed, and what do you think, why do you think they're presenting this narrative in this way?
Well, I think with Spencer, director Pablo Larraín and the writer Stephen Knight have, you know, they obviously sat down and thought, how do we do it differently? Because, you know, The Crown had really cornered the Diana myth, as it were, but through a very realist lens.
Mm.
It is still the telling of, you know, the major events of her life, but which is what the earlier biopics do. It's, you know, pretty much ticking the boxes of, yes, this happened and that happened.
Mm.
But it's doing it with superb writing and acting and so on. So it's as if the filmmakers have had to think, well, if we're going to do Diana again, we have to have there has to be a purpose, really. You know, we've had Naomi Watts do her in a realist way in the film Diana, and we've had, of course, The Crown. How do we take and put centre stage the fact that we're looking at a representation of Diana rather than just a reproduction of her? And I think that's why Spencer has gone for what it calls itself, you know, a fable based on a true tragedy. And so it puts front and centre the fact that it's going to be looking at the construction of her persona. And it's a construction that they've taken from Diana's own talking about her story. Because in the early 90s, she does talk about herself on tapes to Andrew Morton, who wrote a biography of her. She talks in terms of being like a trapped Gothic heroine in palace walls. And so they very much have thought, well, how do we take that image of her and put it centre stage in Spencer? And also, how do we, you know, create a beautifully, you know, rich visual haunting, as it were, in the process?
Mm.
I think it's, in short, it's they wanted to break away and perhaps do something a bit more imaginative with her story, because goodness knows, the join the dots, tick the boxes of her life had been done over and over again since she had first appeared. So, yes, I think that's where it's going. And I would never have imagined that we would hear the words Oscar and Diana film in the same sentence. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it really... it is, because a lot of the stuff you chart is literally soap opera stuff. It's very, you know, no-name actors, low-budget stuff. I guess thinking about these portrayals and how, you know, we've moved into this kind of Gothic horror, maybe touches of a Bronte novel going on in the portrayal, do you think that these portrayals obscure or in any way reduce, you know, the reality, the complexity of a woman like Princess Diana? And particularly for, again, a younger audience, myself, I have no memory of Princess Diana in the 1981-1997 period of her life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it does two things. I think there is a risk of obscuring some of the, I guess, nuances and dimensions of the real Diana. I mean, for example, in life, according to her friends and her closest advisors and so on, she had an enormous capacity for fun. I mean, she would laugh. She was a giggler. And she would, Clive James, the Australian writer and critic, described her as the sun coming up giggling. You know, that's how he used to found her in his encounters with her. So the totally, Bronte-esque, grim, Gothic Diana is, of course, a particularly or potentially very narrow one.
Mm.
However, again, I think Spencer's filmmakers have taken Diana from that particular period and how she was feeling. And when she was, because that's exactly when she was making those long tapes, tape recordings about her life in the royal system. And it's as if it's tried to turn into a visual form what comes across on those tapes. And so it's her sense of paranoia and anguish, if you like, at the disintegration of her marriage and at her failure to understand or to like the royal family and system into which she'd married. So it does, you know, it, by putting itself in a specific period rather trying of 3 days rather than trying to cover her from, you know, St. Paul's wedding through to, you know, Paris tunnel death. By taking just 3 days, I think it saves itself by saying, yes, okay, this was a gothic haunting time for her and this is how we're going to show it.
Another family, just around the corner, you know, putting their bins out every night, every weeknight, you know, that's what they do. They're just another family. Look, it's a fascinating time to be a royal watcher, I'm sure. There's a lot going on in the next few years. There's a lot of Princess Diana stuff. Thank you so much, Giselle, for making the time to shed some light on the Princess Diana of it all at the moment.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your day. That was Giselle Bastin. She's an associate professor of English at Flinders University. She's made a bit of a career out of watching the royals.